move on then to paper three. Who is looking after that one?
Me.
Okay, you again.
Okay, agenda paper three. We're looking at loan commitments here, and particularly issued loan commitments and the interaction with the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. An issuer of a loan commitment is required to apply the impairment requirements of IFRS 9 to that loan commitment, even if the rest of IFRS 9 might not apply to the loan commitment, because they're scoped out. However, the issue arises here is whether the impairment requirements must also be applied to other types of commitments to extend credit, so not your traditional loan commitment. And two examples have been put forward by a couple of stakeholders. The first one is looking at a commitment to commence a finance lease at a date in the future, and the second one is a commitment by a retailer through the issue of a store account, for example, which would give a customer the right to credit when that customer buys goods and services from that retailer in the future. Loan commitments aren't actually defined in the standard, but the basis for conclusions explains that a loan commitment is a firm commitment to provide credit under pre-specified terms and conditions. And hence, when we're looking at whether something falls into the scope of the impairment requirements, the first question to ask is whether the agreement we're looking at actually contains, meets that explanation that it is a firm commitment to provide credit under pre-specified terms and conditions. And clearly the answer will depend upon the particular situations you have in front of you. But we also note that the overarching scope of IFRS 9 is that it applies to financial instruments. And this is further reinforced in the basis of conclusions in paragraph BC 5.244, which refers to loan commitments as being these financial instruments when looking at the scope, discussing the development of the scope. And hence the second question to ascertain is whether the agreement that we're looking at contains that commitment to provide credit also meets the definition of a financial instrument as defined in IS 32. Now, the objective of this group and this session is not to debate features in IS 32 and the definition of a financial instrument itself. This falls outside our remit and doesn't relate to IFRS 9 nor to impairment. But we would be interested in your views on the general approach outlined in the agenda paper that the loan commitment requirements for impairment would apply when the agreement we're looking at is both a firm commitment to extend credit and, secondly, a financial instrument. Okay.
Thank you very much for your explanation. Okay, so I'm Tetsuo, and so let me share my view about the commitment of finance lease first. I originally thought from a credit risk perspective, so it may be better to recognize the expected credit loss for the commitment of the finance lease. But however, from an accounting purpose, I don't think the standard requires the entity to recognize the expected credit losses for the commitment of finance lease. This first paper states that we should ask two questions to make a judgment about whether the commitment is within the scope of impairment requirements. The first question is there a loan commitment? So as Hannah said, there is no definition, but there is a description of the loan commitment. That is, loan commitments are firm commitments to provide credit under prescribed terms and conditions. And in my understanding, so most of the commitment of lease, finance lease meet this description. Based on this paper, a second question we should ask is, does it meet the definition of financial instrument? So IAS 32 defines a financial instrument as any contract that gives rise to a financial asset of one entity and a financial liability or equity instrument of another entity. I don't think the commitment of finance lease does not meet this definition. Because before the entity fulfills the obligation to transfer the right to use an asset to lessee, that contract never gives rise to financial asset or financial liability before the commencement date. So based on this point, I consider the commitment of finance lease is not a financial instrument. Therefore, I think the commitment to finance lease is out of scope of the impairment requirements. And secondly, about the store accounts. In this paper, the retailer does not have any contractual obligation to sell goods or services to a customer. The retailer can refuse to sell goods or services at any time on its discretion. That's why I think it is not a firm commitment to provide a credit. And it does not meet the definition of the loan commitment. Therefore, it is also out of scope of impairment requirements. Okay. So this is my view.
Okay, thank you. So you agree, what we're trying to focus on mainly in the paper is whether you agree that there's two questions to be answered. Firstly, is there a loan commitment? And secondly, is it a financial instrument? So you agree that those are the two questions you would need to answer to decide if you're in scope? Okay. Chris?
I think largely agree with what Tetsuo said. I think the paper is very helpful in terms of cutting through these rather complex scope paragraphs. I agree that the two questions are very relevant and should be asked. I also think there's a third question potentially, which is there may be another scope exception, which I think you should consider in dealing with these questions. Then maybe.
Which is?
Well, is there another scope exception?
Okay.
So if I mention the finance lease, I guess, so I'll have to, on the play, you know, veer into whether I think these things are financial instruments or not. But I would agree with the analysis, maybe it's quite old school, that if you have a contract to perform some non-financial service in exchange for a cash payment, until somebody's perform the non-financial bit, you don't have a financial instrument. And so I'd agree in terms of a commitment to a finance lease, there's no financial instrument until the lessor has provided the property that then, as it were, triggers the obligation to pay the lease rentals. So I would say you get there, so there's not a financial instrument. But I also think, even if you did think it were a financial instrument, I would look to the additional scope exemption that says, well, finance leases are scoped out, except in certain respects, and this is not this type of commitment under a finance lease. Seems to be something within the scope of IS 17. Well, the lease is certainly within the scope of IS 17, and this bit is not scoped explicitly into IS 9. So I would say the scope exception of finance lease would also kick this out, even if it were an instrument. And then on the store accounts, I think again you can get into a discussion as to whether there's really a commitment. But I would say that even if the retailer had a firm commitment to supply goods and services on credit, that would not be a financial instrument because it's a contract to supply goods and services with deferred payment terms, and don't see that as a financial instrument until goods are delivered. Or there's some other term in the contract that says money has to be paid up front, irrespective of the performance.
Okay. So I don't really want to get into too much of the a financial instrument definition, as you know, but in terms of your argument, in terms of generally how you read the scope paragraphs, that you're probably right, there are three questions. So is it a loan commitment, is it a financial instrument, and then is there another relevant paragraph that gets you out? I'd agree with that sort of general proposition. So I guess then if you thought that got you back out again, you'd need to be convinced that the rights and obligations under the lease were captured by IAS 17.
I think then you get into another detail.
I don't want to answer that, but that's what you're arguing.
Because is it the lease that's subject to it, or is it the specific
the
rights and obligations? Or how would you read it precisely? But it's a relevant question as to is another scope.
Okay. I think that's a fair observation. Just housekeeping, does that mean that everything Chris just said was not heard by anybody?
I think because you've got
the side mic should be
side,
okay.
I think it would have been heard, but not.
Okay.
Should I move?
Is your red light on? I can't
no,
see.
No, 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 it won't come on.
That's just okay. Locking on.
All right, just stay there for the moment and maybe we'll need to move you and we'll just double check and see if it's heard. We don't want your important statements to be missed by the world. Sadly, I don't have that power. And I wouldn't have used it anyway, Chris. George. So
for the store account example, and again, I know you don't really want to delve into IAS 32, but you do mention it in the paper, but the paragraph you don't mention is AG 20. And to me, these store accounts are really contracts to buy or sell non-financial items, and they are executory in my view in nature, and therefore they wouldn't qualify as a financial instrument either. So just another reference to reinforce the conclusion.
All right, thank you. Does anybody have anything to add on to this point?
Wow. Just the light's not working, Chris. I think everything else works, so you could
still be heard, though, just to be clear.
So I was getting excited. We were making some time up.
Sorry.
No pressure.
It's a clarification. So on the store cards, I think my understanding of those is that there's normally something in the terms and conditions that on the point of activation you're actually on the hook, and so you should be counting those into scope.
I think you still go through the same process, but yes, you need to decide whether or not you've got a firm commitment, which
yeah.
I think is where you're going.
Yeah.
And then a second question is financial instrument, and then points like the one George just raised can be relevant.
Yeah.
But it gets quickly very sort of non-impairment related and much more techie accounting related. So I think the main thing we have heard, and I won't make you sum up this time, Hannah, I'll do it for you because I'm a sort of kind sort of woman, is consistent with what we've got in the paper with a couple of extra additions about whether or not there's another scope exception that you would need to consider, which I think is a fair point, and also George's point in terms of when you look at the financial instrument guidance, AG 20 might be relevant for the store card, which we didn't specifically mention. So I think that's helpful. Thank you very much.